Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. It's going to be a little bit different of a show today. And so we're halfway through the season, and it's basically halfway through the season. Close enough, right? There's an odd number of games now, but we'll call it the midpoint at week 9. And I wrote some stuff and I recorded some stuff in the off season about basically 16 questions for each division, and I thought, or each conference, one for each team, that I thought were really going to be influential about how Dynasty was thought about into the future. So I've gone through and I've actually revisited them. So I'll read from some of the stuff that I did that I previously wrote and written. I'll read you some of that, and then we'll talk about some of the stuff that I think now, right? What answers do we have and how do we think of them? So we'll just go for the NFC. I'll have an AFC show as well. And then the other show that I'm going to do this week will be, I'm going to do the running back show as well, and then the waiver show as well. So this will be basically a joint snap reactions, kind of a big, basically two big shows in the place of four positional shows this week. So that's going to be, I think it'll be almost the same amount of content time. So let's dive into it. All right. Is Daniel Jones the answer at quarterback for the New York Giants? It seems unlikely, is what I wrote in the offseason of 2022. The team declined to exercise his fifth-year option, and he's shown real no growth during his career. He had 6.6, 6.6, and 6.7 yards per attempt as a passer through his first 3 years of his career. And that doesn't show a ton of growth. The team added Brian Daboll and Joe Sheen as GM. So it was kind of one of those things where, hey, are we going to sort of keep this holdover guy? They'd already showed an inclination not to do it. You know, can he basically prove himself, whether it's here or in a different place, to be a starting quarterback? Well, where are we? Well, I think you can, by almost any measure, say that he hasn't taken a step forward. He ranks 27th among 39 PFF qualifiers in PFF grade. 1.3% of his throws are big-time throws. That's the worst of his career. Only Bailey Zappi at 1.0 and Matt Ryan 0.6 are worse. 3.3% of his throws were turnover-worthy plays. That is 20th out of 39. That's actually slightly below average for his career, I guess better than average for his career. It's worse from last year and 2020. It is a significant improvement off of his rookie season. Okay. His ADOT, lowest of his career. His actual adjusted completion percentage is actually the highest of his career, so that's a notable thing there. He continues to be okay at avoiding sacks. That's been pretty variant, but we'll call it right about it at his career average. This year he's at 19.2% of his pressures have turned into sacks. Historically, that has been 18.9. So again, that's good, I would say, right? It's not great, not terrible. It's good. When you look at some of his rushing stuff, I got a better PFF grade. Yards over contact per attempt is higher. Right, so he's doing some stuff on the ground, but I think that's primarily where his fantasy production's lying at this point. When you look at where he is scoring points wise in the NFL, expected points, he is at 28th in expected points in our safe leagues format where we play a lot of our leagues. He is actually 29th in expected points. His actual performance per game, slightly better, 19th. And there's a couple of guys above him that have some smaller sample size. So I would say right around league average in terms of sort of your longer term starters. That's kind of where he's at. 30th of 40 qualifiers in PFF grade from under pressure. 45.3% of his attempts come under pressure. It's actually the fifth highest in the league. He ranks 16th in pressures attributed to him, which is actually him contributing to that high pressure rate at 15.8% of his pressures actually attributed to him. Big time to throw numbers for him. I will say if there's a positive for him, it's 11th in a clean pocket. He hasn't done a ton, though, would be the thing that I would say, like 0.7% big-time throw rate, 35th in ADOT. So that's really the big thing. I am skeptical of him as a long-term starter. I understand that there's some intangible stuff that people really like about him, including former GMs, former coaches have talked up some of the stuff. I know Joe Judge has talked highly of him. This team has talked highly of him. That said, I struggle to see a long-term starting quarterback. I found the Spotrac comps for his contract really interesting. Bridgewater, Bortles, Brissett, Winston. I mean, how do we feel about any of those guys, right? I mean, is he basically at this point kind of Jacoby Brissett? Like that's an interesting comp where maybe he's one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league, but maybe a bottom 5 to 10 starter, right? If he's got to start for an extended period of time. And I think a lot of the stuff we see from this team gives you an indication, right? The high run rate and all that stuff, some of the schemed up stuff that they have to do to basically be good. I think that all kind of shows in his stuff. So I do not think he is the answer at quarterback for the Giants long term. Could I see them, you know, maybe another year or something like that? Because he's playing them. He really is playing them out of a pick at this point, right? They're actually 6-2 and like in the playoffs. Yeah, maybe they sort of play it out another year. Is that like a Derek Carr type contract where it's really like 1 year guaranteed, something like that? And there's more years behind it. I could see something like that, but color me skeptical. He's a long-term starter. All right, next up we have Jalen Hurts. And this one is, I think, is Jalen Hurts a franchise quarterback? He gives him a huge edge, right? Middle of the pack starting quarterback on a rookie deal. It's allowed the Eagles to make major moves, including $100 million contract for A.J. Brown, the Dallas Goedert contract. And all that stuff is doable when you're paying a quarterback not a lot of money and they're playing like a $30 million quarterback, right? That's all stuff that you can do. Now the bill's going to come due. It will be next year. He will be in the final year of his contract, 2023. Is the last year. He'll be a free agent in 2024. Like, this is extension time. And where do we think he is? Well, second highest PFF grade, 3.5% of his throws are big-time throws, 1.6% of his throws are turnover-worthy plays, 8.5 yards per attempt. He's actually second in PFF clean pocket grade at 91.4. You know, some of the question that I have about him, like, that I've seen about him is like, is he just a play action quarterback? Well, 71.8% completion percentage, it's the best in the league. We don't like that stat typically. 8.6 yards per attempt is actually third in the league. I think I said 8.5 before. It's 8.6. I think I misspoke there. It's third best in the league. 10th in big time throw rates from non-play action. He's actually he has the best PFF grade of non-play action in the league at 86.2. He's second best. He's right there behind Tua in terms of non-play action grade so far. 10th in expected points, and he's outperforming that. And just the stock form at 22.1 expected points, he's got 24.5. In safe leagues, 26.7 points per game. He has 22.8 expected points per game. Where does it put him? No, they have no. They're going to have a late pick. They have New Orleans' pick, which is in the top 10 right now, but actually trending higher as they go along. We'll see. This is pending Monday Night Football. They're going to need to pay him. So I think that's really the big thing there that we'll have to see is, are they going to pay him? He's earned it. And I think he's earned it in a way, too, that's very – the big criticism, I think, of him is, hey, it's scheme stuff. But even when you look on some of the stuff that's not schemed, he's very good. So I think, yeah, is he a beneficiary of the system? I think he is. But when you put him in non-system stuff, like, he's still really good. And I think that's really the big takeaway that I would have. So I think I'm pretty optimistic about him going forward. He's not going to get into like a super max tier or anything like that until he gets paid. But yeah, I definitely want to see sort of what this arc is, but he's trending in a much better direction. And honestly, we need it given some of the quarterback play that's gone on in the league this year. All right, next up we have Dallas, and is CeeDee Lamb a wide receiver one? So, you know, some of the questions I had for him coming in, top five wide receiver in dynasty formats before he posted a top 12 seasonal finish. That's usually not a good formula. He had played a limited role. For example, in 24 games where both Lamb and Michael Gallup had played, Lamb only played more snaps than Gallup in three of them. And the team had moved on from Amari Cooper with Gallup coming back from injury. We didn't sort of know what that would look like. And it had really like a big opportunity for CeeDee Lamb. Well, 13th in expected points. He's at 15.5 expected points. He's underperforming that at 14.6. He's played 91% of their snaps, so that's actually an increase. So that's good. That's certainly an optimistic sign for him in terms of his development, right? One of the big things I thought was, is he just a more glorified slot receiver? He played a ton in the slot, and that was one of the things I think when we looked at, he played a lot in the slot. And there was like a lot of question about how much he was going to play outside. That had trended back even towards college, where he wasn't that good. Now, he was good. He was a good player, but he was like a median level performer playing on the outside and a dominant performer playing on the inside. Sort of how was that going to work? Well, this year he's played 40% of his snaps out wide. He's played 58.6% of his snaps inside. So it's still a very a slot-centric number there. His yards per catch is basically at his career average of 13.3. His PFF grade down from last year. His PFF grade last year was 84.8. It's 78.6 this year. His yards per route run is up pretty significantly, up to 2.25. So that's a really good sign. ADOT a little bit deeper at 11.3. That's the highest of his career. 10.3 as a rookie, 10.9 in his second year, and up to 11.3 this year. So there's some good development there. He's been targeted 68 times, and he has run 247 routes. He's been on the field for 261 routes. 261 passing snaps. He's run routes on 247 of them. So that number boils out to be, he's been targeted on about 27.5% of his routes. So that's pretty good. On his career, he has been targeted on 22% of his routes. So that's way up from where he was last year. And that's including this year. So that, he was at about like between 20 and 21 last his first 2 years. So that's up pretty significantly. The big thing that I would sort of point to with this, and I think how Lamb is kind of a bit of a cautionary tale, is volume is just such a big deal, right? And even if you take his, where he's at now, it's 68 targets, right? And that's over 8 games. That's 8.5 targets per game. That's actually really good. 144 would be his number. 145.5 would be his number for a 17-game season. Like, that's really good. The problem with that, again, is when you start looking at the actual performance, right? How do you sort of get to that top five dynasty cost? That's one of the big things that I am very cautious of, because when you start looking at these numbers and you start seeing where guys rank, right, 144 sounds excellent, and it is really good, but the problem is it would rank 10th last year. So again, you can be really good, but the difference between really good and elite top five dynasty cost is a big difference, right? And you just look, for example, guys like Deontay Johnson last year had a much higher target share. Right now, he's going through a little bit of it's not as good this year. His system's a little bit worse for him and all that. Do I like CeeDee Lamb? Yeah, I do. Do I like his cost? I don't. And that's kind of been one of the big things. I don't want to pay elite prices for non-elite players at non-premium positions. Right, that's a really good way to lose, I think, going forward. And so that's one of the big lessons that I would have. Has it really hurt his dynasty valuation? He's down to wide receiver 8 at keep trade cut, for example. Jefferson, Chase, AJ Brown, Waddle, Diggs, Hill, Kupp, all ahead of him. Olave right behind him. Higgins right behind him there. And then it's Amon-Ra St. Brown and DK Metcalf to sort of round out that top 12. So again, is he good? Yes. Is he sort of good in the DJ Moore level of like, hey, solid wide receiver two? Yes. Does that mean that I want to pay a top 10 cost on him? I don't think so at this point. So I do think he's a wide receiver one for Dallas. I don't think he's necessarily someone that you'd pay wide receiver one prices for in Dynasty. All right, how is Washington's quarterback situation solved, right? We had gone through a long string of players at the quarterback position. I just went back to 2019 when they drafted Dwayne Haskins. Heinicke had actually started the most games for them since 2019 with 15. It was Haskins at 13, Keenum 8, McCoy 1, Alex Smith 6, Kyle Allen 4, Garrett Gilbert 1, Ryan Fitzpatrick 1. Carson Wentz has been okay, 61.3 PFF grade, like that's okay, 6.4 yards per attempt, not really good. More big-time throws and turnover-worthy plays, that's nice. 4.8% of his throws are big-time throws, that's better than his career average. 3.5% of his throws turnover-worthy plays, that's at his career average. He's 23rd in expected points per game. It's kind of where he settled into in his career. Heinicke's been a major disappointment. Wentz is on the injured list now. And I think it's time we need to see an audition from Sam Howell. That said, I'm curious to see if his team will do that, considering they are in the playoff hunt. They are 4-5 at present. They would have the 16th pick in the NFL draft. And they're, I believe, the first team out of the wild card at present in the NFC. So we'll be interested to see how they handle this long term versus present term, you know, with the change in ownership coming on, you know, with what could potentially be a lame duck coaching staff. Are they going to want to develop Sam Howell? I'm not sure they're going to want to do that. And if there's all this change sort of coming, right, new coaching staff, new front office are all things that could be possible under new ownership. And I'd have some pause there, you know, thinking about a Sam Howell audition being super likely. All right, next up we have Justin Fields. Is he the, what's the Chicago plan at quarterback was the actual question that I asked. Coming into the season, I was very, very skeptical about how this team was going to sort of address the quarterback position. Again, new front office, new coaching staff. They had spent basically this year's first round pick on Justin Fields last year. So they didn't have a 2022 first round pick. They had Justin Fields and probably like a bottom five roster, my analysis of it. And I said, sort of, all right, where does that kind of leave us? Well, Justin Fields has been really good in terms of, you know, him as a runner recently, for example. He had, I believe it was, he broke the record in terms of rushing in a day, I believe, this past week, 178 yards on 7 attempts. I believe it's a top one or two number in a game for a quarterback. So that's excellent. His PFF run grade is really good at 91.4. However, when you look at some of the passing stuff, I still think that there's questions. I've seen a really good take, Sumer Sports, which is where Eric Eager, friend of the show, Eric Eager, is now working after leaving PFF. He's there with Thomas Dimitroff, former GM of the Falcons. They had a really good talk this week, and I'd encourage you to go listen to it on their podcast about basically Justin Fields and kind of the thought process behind a trade for Chase Claypool, right? How sort of did that make sense? And I've thought for a while that there was probably there's probably other things going on and why that trade was made. I do think the second for Claypool is probably fair, considering it looks like they had multiple other offers, at least one from Green Bay for a second, right? So that's kind of an indication of kind of his going value. At least it was somewhat of a liquid market that he was dealing with there. I think for Fields, right, the addition of Claypool will help, I think. He has gone from being really bad to start the season to being okay as a passer right now. You know, he's going to draw big reviews for this performance this past week. He's 3 touchdowns, 4.4 yards per attempt. So let's be a little cautious there. Again, some of that was some point-blank shots that he was taking down near the red zone. So that's why you know, his yards per attempt were a little bit lower, but it's 28 attempts, right? That should balance out. It's actually his worst performance of the season in terms of yards per attempt. You know, when you look at his PFF grade, it's right around the median this past week of his on the season. His PFF grade down from last year. Turnover-worthy play rate up 4.9% from 3.7% last year. His big time throw rate is almost in half. It was at 6.1 last year. It's at 3.4 this year. He's taking more time to throw this year, 3.35 seconds compared to 3.06 last year. So is there some stuff that's improving? Yes. Like his NFL passer rating, for example, at 85, it was 73.2 last year. So is he performing a little bit better? Yes. Has he sort of taken this massive step forward? Wouldn't necessarily say that, right? 23.8% of his pressures were sacks last year. It's actually gotten worse this year. Right, so the time to throw stuff was always a question of his about him coming in, and I still think it persists. You know, what does he? By the way, he's taking more time to throw on lesser ADOT as well. So, you know, I think there's a lot of for me, there's a bit of uncertainty there going around about what his direction is. Is he playing better? Yeah, I think so. Have they found maybe a system that's a little bit better for him? Yes. However, when you think about this, look at what his yards, his best yardage of his season is. Passing, 208 yards. Okay, 208 yards is the best passing performance of his season. He had multiple games north of 200 last year. He had 209 in week four, 291 in week nine, and then in weeks 14 and 15, 224 and 228. He had north of 200. He had a 291-yard passing game in Week 9 last year. Hasn't broken 300 yards yet. You know, is this team a good passing team? Maybe it's not necessarily the greatest around him, and that could be part of it. I am skeptical, I think, of him having taken this massive step forward. You know, I put out a thing on Twitter, half joking, half serious, about are really the only consistently good quarterbacks right now, Jalen Hurts and Geno Smith. And someone said back, well, you're missing Fields. And I said, I didn't get into it, but I still have questions, right? And I don't think he's played as a passer to a really high level yet. So call me skeptical still, and I'm not going to elevate him in like the top, you know, eight or something like that at the quarterback position. In fairness, like, there might not be eight good ones. I am still skeptical of his development at this point. But I'll say this, he's trending from a fantasy perspective, right? Some of the stuff that we like to look at, success, getting on the board for like a top 12 seasonal finish, for example, right? That's kind of something that we look at for fantasy. Fields right now is at, in terms of his actual performance, so far in the season, that's from last year. He was in the 30s. This year, he's up to Justin Fields is at 9. He's at 9 this year in terms of actual points per game. That's the safe leagues format as well. So trending towards a success. He's performing just over expectation in terms of points. And a lot of that's like, frankly, a lot of that's his yards, right? A lot of that is the rushing stuff. So, and he leads the league, for example, in scramble yards. Okay. He actually is fourth in terms of yards on design runs. So a lot of it's non-passing. How long does that last for? And a lot of the teams that we'll talk about in this show, a lot of their rushing stuff from their quarterback is because there's limitations there. And, how do we think about Chicago going forward? I think the development of Claypool, I think the addition of Claypool will allow them to make better decisions about Fields going forward. He's got a shot, at least, where I didn't think through maybe a couple weeks this year. I thought they were kind of harpooning him a bit. All right. Is Jared Goff a long-term solution for Detroit at quarterback? If we just look at fantasy, for example, I think Goff's been, frankly, he's been fine. Like, he's at 17.6 points per game. It's ahead of Brady, for example. It's ahead of some other guys like Lawrence. It's ahead of Rodgers. When you take out, Heinicke and Flacco, who aren't really like long-term quarterbacks that start in front of him, he's right on the 1-2, right, that quarterback 1-2 type, that bifurcation there of those guys. So is that good? Yeah, I mean, it's probably better than I think a lot of people expected. I thought he had a decent shot coming into the season to actually produce. I thought the system was pretty good. I thought the supporting cast was pretty good. We haven't even seen Jameson Williams yet, right? So that was, I thought, some good stuff for him going forward. You know, where does he now, like, find himself career trajectory-wise? Well, they're going to have one of the top picks in the draft, probably. They did win this week. I had Detroit over, so maybe I was a little... I was a little bit more hopeful for Goff. He's 24th in terms of PFF grade on the season. When you look, like, he had a good stretch right in the middle of the season. In the middle of the season there, and then, you know, there was an uptick game. The game against Miami was pretty good. This past game, not so good, even though they did get on the board. 7.4 yards per attempt is his. Really his third best of his career, tied for his third best of his career. His second and third season was really his best passing performances. Goff's up a little bit in terms of PFF grade from last year. He's up a little bit in terms of big-time throws, nudging back towards his career average, which is really buoyed by some of the stuff in with the Rams, which was like the height of his career, obviously. His turnover-worthy play rate is the worst of his career, so that's a pause. Yeah, that's a bit of a concern there. Third highest ADOT of his career. He's avoiding sacks at a really good rate, second best of his career there. And I guess second highest drop rate of his career as well. It's funny when you look back at his rookie season, like how harpooned he was. Like, it was really, really hard. He did basically nothing, turned the ball over a ton, and didn't get any help, right? So that was pretty bad. The drop rate this year, a little bit more reasonable than that. It's at 8.5. Again, it's still high for his career. But it's at least a little bit more manageable. It's still one of the top in the league. So maybe he's being held back a little bit by the situation. Again, they trade Hockenson. You know, what's this team envision themselves being? I don't know. Like, I'm really interested in it because, like, when you look, like, they're fifth in terms of draft picks right now. I think Goff actually has a manageable contract going forward. It wouldn't shock me if a team was interested in Goff in his – specifically for his affordability right now. And again, is it something where someone's going to want to pay him a ton of money? I don't know. But like, when you look, like, they could get out after this year, but when you look next year, it's a cap hit of $30 million. The year after that, it's $31 million. And you'd basically pay him just over $42 million total in those 2 years, like in actual cash. Like, it's not, it's actually 50. Yeah, when you add in the bonus, it's like 52. We'll say 52 total. Like, is that something that a team's going to sign up for? Maybe if there's a team that doesn't have better solutions, right? Is this a team, we'll get to Atlanta in a minute. Like, is this a team like Atlanta that could be interested in a guy like Goff, thinking it's a step up over Mariota, right? I think I would look at situations like that for maybe Goff. Finding a spot. Has he played himself out of a starting job? No. Is Detroit going to be the place where he gets it? I don't think, right? I think that this team's probably going to go a different direction, would sort of be my thought. However, when you look at the teams that are actually drafting ahead of them, I'm not sure how great their chances are to get a quarterback. Right? Houston drafting first, probably right in the market for a quarterback. Carolina drafting second, definitely in the market for a quarterback. Vegas, I'm not sure what they're going to do, right? Carr's basically on a one-year deal right now. Pittsburgh, could they double dip at the position? We'll see. I think Kenny Pickett can maybe play his way into getting some more leniency. We'll have to see there. Other teams sort of right after them, probably not so much in the market. Jacksonville, Arizona, Chicago, Green Bay, and then Philly basically rounds out the top 10. So maybe a rogue one in there, right? Something unforeseen could happen in sort of that range, but... Again, I think of the teams in the top 10, right, you might have three, maybe four, could be five of them. You know, we'll see, and we'll see how other teams sort of slide around in there as well. Maybe Indianapolis could be a team that could be in that market as well, and they're trending in a negative direction. So I think that there is definitely some other teams that could maybe, and I think Detroit's better than they've played so far, that could ultimately land ahead of Detroit and put Goff in this sort of half lame duck, half like fantasy viable range of his career. I think it's a really interesting situation there for him. So the long story short is I don't know if he's a long-term starter. I do think he's probably earned more opportunity to be a starter, almost in maybe like a better version of Marcus Mariota type sense with what they're doing in Atlanta. All right, who's the wide receiver one in Green Bay, right? They traded Devontae Adams. They drafted Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. Watson's had a really hard time staying healthy. Doubs is now hurt. I don't think there's a clear answer. Doubs was the pre-season darling, training camp and the like. Where are we at now? I don't know. Has it been okay? Like, it's been, I think, a disappointment from what we were led to believe with him coming out, especially Rodgers even coming out and sort of, giving him, I guess, a vote of confidence sort of early on in the season, right? There was some of that stuff. But 1.24 yards per route run, like, that's not real good. He's been out on 253 routes. He's been targeted on 48 of them. That's 19%. So, again, that's okay. But I think that's not what we're really hoping for. 314 yards so far in his career. He's playing basically 76% of his snaps outside. So that's, I guess, a good indication of, hey, maybe he could be that, could grow on that perimeter role. However, I like, this team is really bad offensively, and I don't think that they have a clear solution. They're going to need to get one. You know, is what's Rodgers' trajectory long term? I'm not sure about that either. So this team has a ton of questions going forward. I don't think there's a clear answer on the, on the team. Alan Lazard's nice, but I don't think he's like a wide receiver one on a team that has serious aspirations. He's maybe a better wide receiver three on a team that has aspirations, would sort of be my thought there. All right, what's the plan for quarterback in Minnesota? The Vikings have a new GM, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, and a new head coach in Kevin O'Connell. The Vikings actually were very different than Chicago. They embraced their quarterback. They gave him a one-year extension through 2023 with a no-trade clause. So Cousins could basically, if they wanted to trade him, he could basically pick his spot. So he's tradable in 2023 if he agrees to it. The direction of the team, certainly a watch. Dalvin Cook lacking really contractual security going forward. Justin Jefferson coming up on an extension. Sort of what's that look like? Adam Thielen aging. You know, where does that sort of leave them trajectory-wise? Well, it leaves them with the second-best record in the NFC. Cousins has been good, 10th in PFF grade, only 6.6 yards per attempt, so it's actually low. But again, I think that number is down throughout the league. So 3.7% of his throws are big-time throws, 2.6% turnover-worthy plays. Again, he's 10th in expected points per game, in the top 10 in expected points per game. It's about 5 touchdowns under expectation, which I thought was notable. What do they see themselves as? Right, they're the current 2 seed, but they only have a point differential of 32. So that's overperforming, right? They're good in one-score games right now. So they're overperforming. I think they're they should be probably less lucky than they are, right? You wouldn't expect them to be this good, you know, to go down sort of the Pythagorean record type calculus, and you would be have Minnesota lower in terms of expectations. Cousins, again, I think he's doing like fantasy viability this year. However, it is it's a down quarterback year with a lot of the good players playing under expectation. And frankly, Cousins is playing under expectation, especially with the 5 touchdowns. So is this a scenario where, honestly, second half of the season, maybe they go, they got, 9 games left, and they go, 5-4, something like that. They finish with 12 wins. But Cousins is actually – so it looks worse on paper, but Cousins is actually better just for some regression towards his mean. I think that's a very real possibility. So that would be something I would watch for Cousins. I'm optimistic about where he's at. I think this team could potentially add a wide receiver. We'll get clarity. He'll be a starting quarterback in 2023 for sure, whether that's in Minnesota, whether that's someplace else. I think we'll get contractual clarity as well, because someone's going to want to – figure out his contract number a little bit better than it is right now. So I think Cousins, when you look around the league, like we could just do a rundown of, maybe I'll do this at some point, sort of the, you know, how good do we feel? And I think I've maybe done it in a couple weeks ago. We can revisit it here in a couple more weeks. Kind of how good do we feel about anyone's direction going forward at quarterback? Cousins is probably going to rank at least in the top 20. And that's, you know, without giving it super much thought, but you just go around thinking some of the teams we're even talking about in this, Atlanta, the Giants, right? The Jets, hell, the Patriots, right? Sort of what Washington, right? Like, what do teams sort of think of their quarterback situation? All of a sudden, like, Cousins looks, he's definitely a top 20. He might even be a top 15 guy in terms of, like, all right, you feel okay about him. So, especially, Kirk Chains, right, with the chains on this weekend was pretty funny. He will be 35, so $36.3 million cap hit in 2023. He'll be 35, probably looking to cash in one last time with, frankly, one of the best contractual performances of any quarterback probably in the history of the NFL. Cousins has done that exceedingly well. All right, who is the starting quarterback for Atlanta in the future? They have elite playmakers with Kyle Pitts and Drake London. Mariota and Ridder are both on the roster. Ridder fell, I think, further than anyone thought. The team could have one of the top picks in 2023. And neither Ridder nor Mariota is likely to win the job long term. But Atlanta could audition Ridder in 2022 to be fully informed on their next decision. So this team's over. So that's what I wrote. This team overperformed. So far, they're 4-5, tied for the lead in the division at present with their record, tied with Tampa. They're not this good, right? They're just not. Second lowest passing rate on early downs at 40.8. Last year, it was 53.1. That was 14th in the league. You say, okay, well, you know, they were, you know, they were better last year. You know, it was different last year. They were worse. Actually, it would be they were worse last year. Well, if you actually look at some of the stuff, it's pretty clear that I think what they think about Marcus Mariota. Last year, again, they were 53.1% throw rate on early downs. When you look sort of in general, in 2021, on all plays, they were 1% under their passing expectation. So basically passing, you know, basically passing expectation neutral would be kind of how I think about that, right? A little bit, to the run heavy side, but based on how good they were and all that, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything notable. Like there were some key situations where they ran a lot more, like they ran a lot more on first down, for example, than you would expect, right? There were some other spots, like, after they got a first down, they ran a ton, right? So, but some of the other stuff on, like, second down, second and long, for example, was the place where they really threw it. They threw a ton on third down, right? Even third and short, they threw a lot. So those were some key spots where they were sort of over expectation. This year, every single situation, they were run heavy. They're 17% under expectation on first downs, 12% under expectation in total. You look on third and short, they're 14% under expectations. Third and long, they're actually 5% under expectations. On first down, after they'd pass for a first down, 22% under expectation. After they'd run for a first down, 26% under expectation of passing. So you look at all of those things, right? You just sort of add that up. It's pretty clear that that's not really what they want to be, right? This is much more run heavy. Even you go back to Tennessee, like it was 7% under expectation when Arthur Smith was the offensive coordinator in 2019 and 2020 in Tennessee. They were 13% under expectation on first down, for example. It was much less extreme. And I would say like their best player was their running back. And they had a better quarterback. I think that this team kind of when you sort of blend last year and you blend the Tennessee experience, you say, okay, like what they did in Tennessee was kind of lean into what they were. I think they've extremely leaned into what they were this year, which is we need to run the ball. We need to run it a ton. We're actually pretty good at it, so we just need to kind of keep doing it. And almost no matter the situation, that's the better situation than passing it. When you have Kyle Pitts, when you have Drake London, like, that's not what you want to be long term. Like, it's pretty clear that this isn't what they want to be long term, but this is kind of what works. You know, when you look at Mariota, he's fine, right? 7.7 yards per attempt. Like, he's actually been pretty good at that in his career. You know, his PFF grade's kind of right in line with what he's been in his career. You know, his turnover worthy play rate right in line with his career. His big time throw rate below his career average, right? A dot is actually up. You know, so there's some stuff there where you're like, okay, like, there's some, you know, there's some good and there's some bad. I think overall, when you look at this, like, they want to be something more than this, not just this run team. The question I would have is, like, Mariota going to play them out of this, right? Is he going to play them out of a high pick? I think that's possible, especially given how bad the NFC is this year. Like, I could certainly see that. The question that I would sort of ask is, like, how good can they be kind of over the rest of the season? PFF gives them a 22% chance to make the playoffs. It actually gives them the second easiest strength of schedule the remainder of the year. So, again, is Mariota going to play them out of a spot where they're going to have an easy access to a top pick? He might, but I think that they're looking for bigger things for the future than this. All right. Is Baker Mayfield the future in Carolina? No. We're 41 minutes into this podcast, and I haven't gotten through three divisions yet. The answer to this question is no, he's not. Team's going to have a top five pick. He's outplayed by P.J. Walker, even though he came in for him this past week. 27.8% of his pressures have turned into sacks. 53.9 PFF grade. Those are the worst of his career. His previous worst was 62.4. So he is, I think, pretty clearly not the future in Carolina. They're going to be able to reset the clock here at quarterback. They'll get rid of his contract. They'll have get rid of Darnold as well. Walker will be there. Matt Corral will be there. So we'll sort of watch for that. I think they should go back to Walker and see what they have. I think it's clear that they don't have it in Mayfield. And they probably don't have it in Walker either, but I think he's got a wider range of outcomes for them than Mayfield does. And that they need some of that ceiling range of outcomes for them to really turn this around. And I don't think Mayfield's shown that so far. All right. How do the Saints look after Sean Payton? So he retired he retired after last year's, and he was the coach for the Saints since 2016. They'd gone through a lot of changes. They were the most run-heavy team in the league last year when they went from Brees to Jameis Winston without the full set of weapons. Now they've got Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, Jarvis Landry, all upgrading the wide receiver position to go along with Alvin Kamara. You know, what do we sort of think of that? Well, Michael Thomas out. Jarvis Landry's been out as well. Chris Olave's been stupendous. So I say this before Monday Night Football when, you know, Dalton's record on primetime isn't necessarily the best, but he's got the fifth best PFF grade. Olave is really, really good. Dalton's an unrestricted free agent in 2023. They don't have a clear way to address this position, right? I've seen some ideas kicked around, like, could they be a Rodgers team if Green Bay wanted to move on from Rodgers? I'm not sure how they make that work. They always make it work, so that's, you know, I guess they could try and make it work, but I'm not necessarily sure. When you look, you know, I'm not necessarily sure it's that easy, but when you look at them, like, what do they... It's the same basically as last year. Their big thing here, 6% under expectation in terms of passing on all plays. That's where they were last year. There's some spots where they throw the ball a lot more. For example, they throw the ball a lot more this year on second and short. 15% over expectation on second and short this year. Last year, they were 23% under expectation. They basically ran it almost all the time on second and short last year, where they throw it significantly more than 50% of the time on second and short. Otherwise, they're a run-heavy team basically in every other conceivable setting. You know, Dalton is playing well. And how many, like, what's the clearest way to sort of improve over Andy Dalton? In different years, there might have been different opportunities. But if we're looking at a scenario where, you know, is Brady going to retire? We're in a post-Big Ben world. We're in a post-Rivers world. right? We're in the post-Manning world, right? We're sort of in this span where there's not, there's still a lot of questions at quarterbacks, and you don't have like these longer term, I'm not sure, generational might be over, you know, it might be too inclusive to use that term to include guys like Rivers and the like in that number, in that descriptor. But, you know, is Dalton, what do they want to be? I think they want to win a Super Bowl. Is Dalton their best chance at that? I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's a really interesting situation because the way that they've structured their team, it hasn't given them a clear opportunity, and they don't have a first-round pick. So I am holding on to Dalton right now into the future because I think – I think there's a non-zero chance that he's a starter there next year. So, and he's playing, frankly, he's playing better than Winston has at any point through his career in with the Saints. All right, what's the Brady plan? Right, what's the plan for Tampa after Brady? He's got 1 year left on his contract. He can choose his destiny after this year. Of course, he's going through the personal stuff. At 45, he could retire or go play someplace else. Right, there's already rumors that. I've heard of him going back to San Francisco again. Like, those are heating back up. He's fourth in terms of expected points per game. Mahomes, Allen, Murray ahead of him. 19.9 expected touchdowns. He's only got 9. Yardage expectation, 27-54. He's at 22-68. He's actually, and this is the crazy part about Tom Brady, he's quarterback 8 in PFF grade, and it's the worst grade of his career. His PFF grade is 75. In 2019, it was 76. He hasn't been beneath 80 since 2010. There was some really limited PFF grading back from his rookie season. I think they maybe graded 60 snaps or something like that, and he was low then. But again, that's not even fair to him to even use that. Brady's been a disappointment, and he's still a top 10 quarterback in the league. That's probably an indictment of maybe a lot of quarterbacks in the league, and it's an endorsement of Brady's longevity, frankly. So, and of his performance. So, long story short on Brady, I think he can bounce back this year. I think that the teams that have him on their team could be potential disappointments, and they could be looking to sell. I'm interested in buying for the cost of a second. Where I have a need at quarterback. For example, if I have a Stafford problem, if I take a shot, something like that, and if I'm competitive and I take a shot on Brady for a second, I think there's a shot that he gets it turned around. I think there's a shot that Stafford gets it turned around. I'm sort of combining my odds to cost of a second that one of them figures it out. We saw Brady kind of at the end of that game, go down and win it. And, you know, maybe that's the, you know, is this the story arc where, hey, they were, you know, whatever, 3-4, or whatever they were heading into this week. And then, you know, Brady leads them on a drive. And then now they go to Germany and they beat Seattle. And, you know, that was a stretch of, you know, they won 7 of their next 8, something like that. Like, is that, and head into the playoffs as a 3 seed, whatever, right? You're hosting a home playoff game, right? Is that something that's in the range of outcomes? I think it is, right? And I think that he's performed under expectation for a variety of different factors. It's been some of him, and it's been, frankly, some of the team. So I think that there's a chance that this thing gets fixed, especially with some better health from Godwin and the like there. This team's actually run it more frequently. I've seen there's some criticism of Leftwich that I saw. I didn't actually see the quote. I just heard someone sort of ripping him, saying that they need to run it more on first down. It's interesting because they haven't. They're 4% over expectation on first down in terms of their pass frequency, right? 4% more pass than you'd expect based on their situation. Last year was 5%. So they haven't really run it more on first down this year than they have in prior years. So that's the big thing with them. It's pretty consistent in line with what they did. Right? They pass it just slightly less often this year than they did last year, given their situation. Second and short is a place where they're actually throwing it a lot more than they were last year. But that's really the significant change. And some of the second down and medium and long stuff, they are running it more frequently, but they're still pass heavy basically on every situation. So that's really the thing there with them. I'm not, I don't know. I think that there's ways that this sort of gets right And, you know, maybe Brady just playing with a little bit better attitude might do it as well. Him and Rodgers feels like watching The Walking Dead. All right, Kyler Murray, 24th out of 39 in PFF grade. Only 2.3% of his throws are big-time throws. That's 29th in the league. 3.1% of his throws are turnover-worthy plays. This situation looks totally dysfunctional. DeAndre Hopkins, still a target hog. Ertz is a volume player when there's not Hopkins there, right? Marquise Brown looks really good. Again, that's not where Hopkins is there. How does the situation sort of get right long-term? I don't know. We'll see. Is this a scenario where Kingsbury's, you know, potentially fired? That's possible too. So I think there's a lot of dysfunction going on in this offense. It wasn't good in the offseason. It's not good now. And like, it's trending for what could be a nasty offseason, I think, for these guys, especially, you know, how they're playing. I saw that they were favored this week against Seattle, and I was like, I don't think they deserve to be favored really against many teams, and certainly not Seattle, and Seattle beat them. So we'll watch for this going forward. It doesn't look pretty, would sort of be my thought there. Again, I think Murray is probably a good bet to be a good long-term starter. Is he a great long-term starter? Like, I'm skeptical of that. I'm skeptical of that. So I think for fantasy purposes, like, he could be – and I think for fantasy purposes, like, he'll be pretty good probably. When you look at his expected points, for example, like, he's third. However, like, it's, he's performing, you know, at the eighth highest number in points per game in our safe leagues format, right? He's more than a touchdown under expectation per game. That's not good. So the situation, pretty good. Murray's performance, not very good. In terms of fantasy, the situation in general, pretty dysfunctional. And I think his underperformance of the actual fundamentals of the fantasy situation is probably a symptom, if you will, of the poor performance that this offense has had. All right. Is Matthew Stafford's elbow a long-term concern? That was my one for the Rams. I don't know. The team's the problem, though. They're 30th in pass blocking rate, 31st in yards per play. Outside of Cup, there's a real problem. Stafford, 22nd in PFF grade. Like, that's obviously below the median out of 39 guys. A disappointment there. 28th in clean pocket grade. 3.4% of big-time throws. Actually, his worst of his career since his rookie season, right? So his worst was in his rookie season. Since then, this is where he's been at. 6.4 ADOT, right? That's really bad. Taking sacks at 26.7% of his pressure rate. That's like the worst of his career. I think when you sort of look at that, what does that sort of speak to? They don't have clear answers in this passing game, right? I think that's the thing, right? You sort of look, it's Cup, it's Higbee. Like, we sort of liked Higbee early on in the season. Like, it was pretty good performance for fantasy purposes, but he's turned into a pumpkin the last couple of weeks. How does this team beat you? Certainly not running the ball. They can't run to get out of their own way. How does this team beat you in terms of passing? Like, it's Cup, and then Allen Robinson's been a total disappointment. I don't know how this situation has a quick fix. I know how Denver has a quick fix. I know how Tampa has a quick fix. I don't know how the Rams have a quick fix, and that's the problem with this. Like, I'm skeptical that they get it turned around this year. Like, I think he's going to play. He'll probably play better because it'd be tough to play worse. That said, I think the situation has turned bad pretty quickly. I don't think people are getting fired, but I think that this team really needs a remake in the offseason, and they need to get some things figured out, whether that's on their offensive line, play selection wise, you know, player selection wise with their supporting cast as well. Like, they have a lot of problems there. But I don't know if it's – I don't think it's Stafford's elbow, right? So to answer the question, is Stafford's elbow a long-term concern? I don't think that this is an indication of that. I think it's probably a this is a symptom of a much bigger illness, if you will. All right, how is Trey Lance progressing? I found this to be absolutely incredible. So since 2017 when he was in college, he's attempted since he was in high school in 2017 – right, that was his last year of high school. And since then, he's thrown 420 pass attempts. 318 in college and 102 as a professional. 2017 was the last time he was like a full starter. You know, the last time that he, you know, he was a starter for 1 year in college. But 2017, he said 420 passing attempts. Garoppolo's a free agent, right? There's rumors about Brady potentially heating up. I don't know how I feel great about this one. They don't have a first-round pick next year. They're probably going to pick late. It's probably not going to be that big of a deal. And then, honestly, the cost that they paid for Trey Lance, the way they've played around him, has been like it's not going to be that penal, which is pretty funny. It's when you think about like, oh, they gave up 3 first-round picks. Well, they gave up a later one. You know, mid one, I guess. They gave up a later one last year, and they're probably going to give up a later one again this year. Like, you could whiff 3 times from there and be like, okay, like, yeah, it would be nice to have had maybe 1 or 2 players from that range, and it'd probably make you a better team. But you could whiff from there and still be good, right? So I think that's the interesting aspect of this is, like, yeah, the cost was a lot. How detrimental has it been? Ultimately, because of how good they've been kind of around him, it hasn't been that super detrimental. So we'll watch for that. I mean, I don't know what Garoppolo is a free agent, right? Are they going to pay him to bring him back? Like, it's a super complicated and touchy situation. Brady there for a year, like, it seems like it's still possible, and that's out there. I don't know. I'm super interested to watch this going forward because I don't know if there's like a clear, I don't know if there's like a clear, if he's a clear 2023 week one starter without some form of competition. I think this team has shown that they have really high aspirations, and I don't know if they can necessarily trust that out of a guy who's thrown the ball 420 times since basically January of 2018. All right, what's the quarterback plan in Seattle? Is the question. Geno Smith and Drew Lock competed for the position with Geno Smith winning out. It's unlikely that he wins a long-term job in Seattle. Seattle should be one of the leading contenders to address the position in the offseason. Boy, was I wrong. 6.0 yards per attempt or yards per play this year actually ranks 4th. They found a dude with Kenneth Walker who, you know, listen, I think we can sort of talk up running backs not mattering. But it's clear that he gives them something, right? So he's been really good. Geno, 4th best PFF grade on the season. Tua, Jalen Hurts, Mahomes ahead of him. He's ahead of Dalton, who's actually 5. I say this holding my breath before Monday Night Football, knowing his record on Monday Night Football. But that's ahead of Burrow, Allen, Brady, Cousins, and Rodgers. Right, those are the guys there. So, yeah, I mean, and when you actually looked at it, I haven't checked again for this week. I know coming into this week, he had had 3 of the best 5 PFF passing grades of the season. And I believe Burrow's at 90.4 for this week. He's at 90.4 for this week. We'll say Geno conservatively 6 of the 3 of the top 6 PFF grades of the season have gone to him. So awesome performance. Geno Smith's been terrific. Is he going to get paid? Like, is this, this looks very much like a Ryan Tannehill reboot, if you will. I wasn't sure if that was going to be true a couple of weeks ago, right? We've seen some of these guys come and go. Like the Philip Walker, the PJ Walker optimism lasted like a week. And it was a fun week. It really was. I enjoyed that week. But they pulled him last game. Like, the allegiance was very little, right? And that's kind of what we see for guys that are this developmental track. Geno Smith being out of the league, coming back, being a backup, basically a career backup, and now getting an opportunity and turning around. Frankly, it's one of the best stories in the league this year, and it's really terrific. I'll be super interested in what his next contract looks like, sort of what the level of commitment is there. I think when you look at them, like over the past, you know, the Russell Wilson experience, like they were just under expectation in terms of pass frequency, depending on how you want to sort of sort that, right, or how you want to chop that up in terms of the Russell Wilson era. It's fair to say throughout that, under expectation. This year, 2% over expectation in terms of their pass rate. So I think it's a really interesting, thing. And to be and it's an interesting development. Like, they show more confidence in Geno to throw the ball than they did with Russell Wilson, which is fascinating. I think it's really interesting that when you look at when you actually go to Spotrac for Geno Smith, he doesn't have a market value button. Which is, like, I don't know if it was an intentional oversight where they're like, yeah, like, we don't have any comps for this, or if this was like, yeah, we don't, you know, of guys of this range, you know, like, career backups, it's not something we sort of incorporate, or you have to have like a level of performance throughout your career to actually be, you know, to be included on this list or whatever. It's just hilarious that he doesn't, right? So there's not a probably there's not a sample size of like four or five guys to actually compare Geno Smith to, which I just find to be kind of amazing. So it's one of the better stories of the league. When you look at it, he's been a top five guy. It's been really, really awesome to watch. So I am excited and optimistic about him going forward. Again, I think he's much more like Keep Trade Cut, for example, has him probably still disrespected. Quarterback 19, which is actually ahead of Russell Wilson, which is amazing. 23 for Stafford, which, again, we're just going to kind of rinse repeat. Like, there's certain things that are really easy. Betting on rebounds like that are really easy. Trey Lance is still 13, for example. Kenny Pickett's 14. So, I am interested sort of long-term in Geno as like the in that quarterback 2 type range. I find him to be a really from basically dirt cheap. Again, I don't think you sell this for a future second, right? I think you hold on to that because I think he's got long-term starter upside. So there's that. 16 questions basically answered, semi-answered, half-answered. It's a little over an hour. So I'll do another one for the AFC. That'll be out tomorrow. I'm going to sneak the running back one in here as well. I'll have your waiver show, trade show as well. That'll be the normal stuff. But we're basically compressing your snap reactions into basically two longer thematic shows for this week. All right, that'll do it for this edition. I hope you enjoyed this. Let me know what you think in terms of if I got anything right, wrong, or anything like there, or any questions that you might have going forward. I'll be working on my 32 questions for the off season here coming up, so we'll be on the lookout for that. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.